Hello, Steve here. Before we start this episode, I just want to pop up and say that our next live stream show of An Evening of Unnecessary Detail is on Sunday, the 28th of April, from the world famous Royal Institution in London. You can log in from anywhere in the world to join our nerdy community in the online chat room during the show and watch the show again on demand for 14 days afterwards. The best bit is the live stream tickets are all pay what you can, and you can get them now from festivalofthespokennerd.com/tickets.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Steve Mould.
I'm Helen Arney.
I'm Matt Parker, and this is An Evening of Unnecessary Detail, now featured on a podcast of Unnecessary Detail.
That is a lot of detail.
Hey, we believe in detail all the way down.
It's another one of those episodes where we're bringing you our favourite bits from the Bloomsbury Theatre Nights we hosted back in April.
And this edition is a real bumper collection. I'm doing a song that I never normally get to perform on stage. And we have comedian Rachel Wheely highlighting a very tiny and specific corner of the timekeeping world.
We've got biochemical engineer Michael Sulu explaining the potentially fatal difference between cylindrical objects. And zoologist Hannah Ayoub tries to make friends with a honey badger.
That's easy for you to say, Steve. But I think the show actually starts with me up first.
Yeah. And can I do a proper intro for you? It's my turn.
I mean, you're kindly phrasing that like a question.
It's not. There's no choice.
It's not optional.
Please put your hands together and welcome to the stage with one of his bits, as he calls them, from his solo show, Humble Pie. It's the one with the Australian accent. It's Matt Parker!
This bit, this was one of the first bits that caught my eye when I was collecting stories of maths going wrong. I want to write a whole book and then a stand-up show about maths mistakes. And some of them are quite serious, because you have maths mistakes in aviation, medicine, engineering, you know, everybody dies. And I promised Penguin a comedy book about maths mistakes. And I can't have every single story that ends and then everyone was dead. Next story, right? And so I was looking for some pointless stories, and I found so many from the world of junk food advertising. UPM, what is it about advertising junk food? That people just stopped doing maths. Or they weren't doing maths to start, I don't know. But there's no maths occurs. And the strange thing is they want to do maths. Like, when someone advertises junk food, an incredible number of times, they will do it by using a big number. All the time. So actually, a mathematician I know went to a maths conference in Canada a couple years ago, and while they were there, they walked into a pancake-themed restaurant, and as they walked in, they saw in big letters above the counter, 1,001 topping options. And they thought, wow, 1,001 topping options. They must have 14 different toppings, of which you can choose four. It's exactly 1,001. 14, choose 4, right? So they walked up to the counter and went, hey, what are the 14 different toppings, of which I must have precisely 4 to make the sign work? And they're like, no, we've got like 26 different toppings, and you can have as many or as few as you want. What? That's over 67 million possible combinations. I demand to see the manager. True story. And then they asked the manager, they said, why if the number, the correct number is so much bigger, why did you put 1001 on the sign? And they said they just thought it sounded like a big number. At least try and do the working out, like McDonald's did. It's that slide from before. When they brought out the McChoice menu. So this was early on. This is like one of the first menus that McDonald's did. And they put a bunch of their, you know, some of the classics, cheeseburgers, McFlurries. Oh, that's the McHot dog. You may not recognize that because it's the last time McDonald's tried to sell a hot dog in Europe. In any other show, that would be the biggest mistake on the screen. For us, however, it is the advertising campaign where they took the McChoice's menu and advertised it as having 40,312 possible combinations. Really, McDonald's? Let's unpack that now, shall we? So, if you have a menu where there are 8 different items, you can work out how many combinations there are by taking the standard McDonald's, would you like fries with that? But you generalize it to every item on the menu. So you imagine someone comes into the restaurant with no food, and the staff are like, oh, you have nothing. Would you like an apple pie with that? Yes or no? Would you like a cheeseburger with that? Yes or no? Would you like a McHot dog with that? Probably no. And after 8 yes or no questions, they're all the options. You can either have or not have everything. That's it. And because there's 8 opportunities, each with 2 possible values, 2 to the power of 8 is 256. That's it, right? That's every possible combination you can have. That includes walking into McDonald's and ordering everything on the menu, so just saying yes all the time. It involves ordering any combination of things on the menu, and that includes ordering what I like to refer to as the null meal. So you walk into McDonald's and go, I've made a terrible mistake. No. And if you were here yesterday, that is the same number as the Swiss train story, because once again, there's 8 different things that you can have, each with 2 possible values. Despite being a completely different situation, it's the same value. Maths. Now, because the number that McDonald's were advertising was so much bigger than the correct number, 153 people complained to the Advertising Standards Authority. I believe of those, 153 of them were mathematicians. And McDonald's had to go to court to show their working out. I mean, as an ex-math teacher, that just pleases me so much. Oh. And so McDonald's show up, and they're like, no, of course we worked it out. What are you talking about? We worked out 8 factorial. Now, some of you know about 8 factorial. If you're unfamiliar with 8 factorial, it's not someone being like angry at 8. 8, right? It's 8 exclamation mark means 8 times 7 times 6 times 5 times all the numbers smaller than it. That is the number of ways you can arrange 8 items. Because if there's 8 things that you can choose from, there's 8 you can take first, there's 7 less to go second, so 7 options, then 6, then 5 all the way down. And so, and then you get the total of 40,320. 8 factorial. So what McDonald's are basically assuming is people are going to walk into McDonald's, look at the menu, and just go, wow, I mean, it's all so delicious. I'll tell you what, give me 1 of everything so I can eat them in every conceivable order. And that's not even the number in the ad, though, is it? Right? It's smaller. So I get this, by the way. I totally understand how this happened, because this would have started in like just some brainstorming meeting. Like there's some agency, they're like, how are we going to get the big McDonald's, the Big Mac account, how are we going to get it? And someone's like, oh, we're advertising the McChoice menu, right? Well, we should talk about how many things you can choose from. Like how many combinations are there? And someone's like, oh yeah, it's a great idea. I remember from school and the calculator, that shouty, the angry button. That's combinations, right? 8. Whoa! Look at the size of that number. That's way bigger than 1001, the biggest number we could previously conceive of. That sounds like a big number. Put that in the ad. And then one brave soul leant forward and went, no, you idiots. You're still including all the combinations, but you only have 1 item in them. And that's not really a combination now, is it? We better subtract those 8. Off there. So they did 8 factorial, subtract 8. And by their own logic, they left in the null meal. So good. And when it was pointed out to them during the trial, people were like, well, you've done arrangements. Well, let's not talk about the rest of it, right? They doubled down. They're like, no, we meant to do arrangements. And they proceeded to argue that the order in which you eat McDonald's makes a difference to what meal you're eating. From the final ruling, the advertisers said that they were aware that some people might consider a double cheeseburger and milkshake to be the same permutation as a milkshake and double cheeseburger. There's so much here we don't have time to unpack. On a number of different levels of both accuracy and precision. However, they proceeded to point out that they believed that each permutation could be considered a different eating experience. And they won! Yeah, the judge is like, yep, you've convinced me. 153 mathematicians are like, no! What is happening? Right? You've destroyed the energy. And so they appealed, right? McDonald's had to go back to court to answer some follow-up questions. And when they showed up, they thought ahead. They're like, oh, okay, we barely got away with this last time. What are we going to do this time? And they showed it. They retconned it. They changed it. They came and they're like, oh, forget what we said before. We didn't mean that. We forgot to tell you that what we actually did was include the flavors. Ah, right, because if you include the different flavors of the drinks in the menu, there are actually 16 different things you can order. And if you do the working out correctly, if you have the would you like 16 times, 2 to the power of 16 is over 65,000. And the judge is like, oh, 65,000, that's a bigger number than the 40,312 in the ad. And mathematicians are like, that's the first right thing that's happened so far. And the judge is like, because you managed to prove a bigger number, even though the one in the ad was calculated in a totally incorrect manner, you're no longer guilty of false advertising, and they won the appeal. It's like, what is the whole thing is a nightmare, right? And then I was like, you know what, when I do this show, like, because the temptation was to do a stand-up show where I just come out and we all laugh at some kind of terrible math mistake, and then we just repeat that for as long as I have math mistakes to talk about, which is a very long time. And I was like, no, I can't do that. So what I'm going to do is, for everything I talk about, I'm going to try and do one of two things. I'm either going to try and fix it, which can't fix this, too late, or I'm going to try and find a more pleasing solution. Like, was there some nice maths that was missed at the time that I could now investigate? And in this case, you know what? I'm going to side briefly with McDonald's because, no, hear me out. A moment ago, when we were all laughing at the notion of a milkshake and cheeseburger being different to a cheeseburger and a milkshake, a few of you, come on, were thinking, kind of does. You didn't want to say anything because of peer pressure, but you're like, I mean, having a milkshake as a starter, is that a different meal to having it as a dessert? I mean, I'm not in a strong position to make fun of anyone being obsessive about anything. Right? So I get it. Fine. You know what? The order in which you eat McDonald's now does make it a different eating experience. If we assume that, we just need to apply it properly. McDonald's just didn't bother doing the math correctly because they just did it for 8 items. But who's ordering all 8 items, right? You can order fewer than 8 items. You can order any number of items, N, from 1 to 8. And then what you do is, first of all, you work out how many ways you can choose that many items. So there's only one way to choose 8 from 8, because there's 8 ones in front of you. There are 28 ways to choose 2. There's 28 different combinations of 2 things from 8 items, if you don't care about the ordering. All the way down to there's only one way to eat all 8 of them. Well, mathematically speaking. fun side fact, if you add these up, 255. Plus the null meal gives you 256, which is the same answer to the same question despite completely different methods of working it out. Oh, I love this subject. Okay. Do you then work out the number of orders in which you can eat them? Because eating them in different orders makes them different eating experiences. Right? You run the whole numbers together, add them all up, you get 109,600. Right? That's the correct number if McDonald's logic is to be believed. But they didn't do that. They did n factorial subtract n, and then they worked it. Oh, it's just the worst. The only good thing that came out of this whole situation is before McDonald's, no one had ever taken n factorial and then subtracted n. Why would you do that? It's meaningless. So mathematicians named that the McCombination. is now in the online encyclopedia of integer sequences. It's an official part of maths. McDonald's produced novel mathematical concepts. So amazing, right? However, to this day, no one has ever found a practical application for combinations. If anyone here ever finds an actual use for n factorial subtract n, please do let me know. Or let any mathematician know. We would love to add to it, all right? And that is junk food and maths mistakes. Thank you very much.
Come on.
Go, Matt.
Now, I know you're intending that in a patronizing sense. I choose to interpret it genuinely.
Because that's a shame, because that is not the vibe we were going for.
Matt, if that was something yes. from your new show that you just recorded, tell me, how can people get hold of this work of art?
I'm also taking that genuinely. Well, thanks for asking, Stephen. So, I recorded the stand-up special of my show, Humble Pie, which the McCombination thing was from. And if people want to check that out, they can head on over to standupmaths.com.
Hey, if you remember my introduction from earlier, it looks like it's time for our first guest. Do you get it? Do you know who it is? Nice. Time. The word time.
Yeah,
I'm wasted
a good one,
on this
Matt.
Podcast.
Yeah. I mean, what I think you're trying to say is up next is Rachel Wheely, who was talking about the Greenwich time signal, a.k.a. the pips.
Hello! My name is Rachel Wheely. I am a short adult. In case you were wondering why there's a particularly confident child on the stage. And it's very, very exciting to be here. There's a hell of a lot of people here, Matt. It's just been me and my cat for the last 2 years. So this is very, very exciting. Any Greenwich time signal fans in? one kind of like slice of people here, one man over there. Okay, good. I'm going to convert you all by the end, so it's fine. I'm a comedian. Before I was a comedian, I used to do a different job. I worked for a broadcasting corporation. Not going to say which one. But it's a British one. That's all you need to know. All you need to know about that. And I used to work on a program which some of you may have heard of called the Today Program. Anybody know the Today Program? Anybody listen to the Today Program? If you listen to the Today Program, raise your hand. Keep your hands raised, please. For those who haven't heard of the Today Program, it's a morning news show on Radio 4 for people who like to wake up both sad and angry. But I didn't bring you here to talk about the Today Program. I brought you here to convert you to be Greenwich Time Signal fans, because the way that the Today Program starts is the best bit about it. 5 seconds to six every morning on weekdays before you write in, this happens. Yeah! It's exciting, isn't it? And that gives me a slight shiver, because what that noise means to me at 6 o'clock in the morning, when I've been out the night before, is that I am strapped to the front of the flagship national radio news program with no hope of a wee until thought for the day. And the terrifying thing about the pips is there's a fader on the desk with the pips on it, and that fader is up all the way through the program. Those pips are coming, whether you stop talking or not. So through the glass there are the presenters. And what happens if you keep talking up to the pips and you carry on talking is that you do something called crashing the pips. Ooh. Sounds scary, doesn't it? Disciplinary action for crashing the pips. When I worked at the BBC, Michelle Hussein started on the Today program. Any Michelle fans in? You should be fans, she's a legend. She used to do something which she called, and I thought this was adorable, kissing the pips. It's where you talk up to them and you don't quite crash them, but... Jim Nocte used to do unspeakable things to those pips. It was absolutely revolting. I don't want to even think about it. Some pips facts for you. The Greenwich time signal, introduced in 1924, generated by the BBC since 1990. And people set their clocks and watches to these for years. But these days, we've got digital radios now. It's not quite so relevant. Does the BBC get rid of them? Hell no! The BBC keeps them in and writes sentences like this in some of its annual reports. Their utility in calibration is diminishing as digital radio entails time lags. That's why they haven't taken it out, because nobody understands the sentence. If you would like a visual representation of your pips, and I think that you would, here they are. You'll see that there are six of them. The first five are a tenth of a second long. The last one is half a second long and has only been half a second long since 1972. More on that later. All the pips are at 1 kilohertz. And if you would like to know when to set your watch to the pips, these are the 8 o'clock pips. So the time to set your watch to 8 o'clock is here. Or if you're listening on a digital radio, here. So, what's brilliant about all of this is that there are some people involved in working out how time is organized, because it's very important that we're all on time, all the time. And so there exists something called leap seconds. Is anybody aware of leap seconds? Oh, everybody loves leap seconds. Okay, I should have started with that. Right, leap seconds. So, because the Earth's rotation is slowing down, guys, don't want to panic you guys, but it is. So many Earth days are not 24 hours long. They're a little bit long, they're a little bit short. And the people in charge of time are very concerned that we don't start inserting tiny amounts of time into the calendar, because that would just be very fiddly. So what they do is they wait till there's a whole second to go in, and they put it in on the 31st of December at midnight. And that's represented by the pips, at which point there are 7 pips. I know, right? People stay up for this. Now, these leap pips are announced by the International Earth Rotation Society 6 months in advance. We have added 27 since January the 1st, 1972. And what happened in 1972 was there was a conversation at the BBC where somebody said, but how will we know when that last pip happens, whether it is a normal pip or a leap pip? Because all the pips were a tenth of a second long, remember? That's when they changed it, so the last one would be half a second long, so we know if there are 7, it's a leap pip, and we can all lose our shit. Now, it turns out, though, the problem with all of this is that nobody really understands time. Like, nobody even knows when noon is. Does anyone know when noon is? Not actually what time noon is, but when noon is. It moves by 16 minutes over the course of a year, so this is all So, there was a colloquium in 2003 to decide whether we would carry on doing all of this leap pip nonsense. And I can see you're all on the edge of your seats to know what happened at the colloquium in Torino, in Italy, in 2003. All the time people from all over the world gathered together in a room and they discussed this issue. Do we continue with leap pips? Do we continue allowing nerds to stay up until midnight to listen for that 7th pip? And I can tell you what they decided was to defer the decision until 2023. It's next year! Oh my God, I can't cope. Thank you very much indeed for having me. Cheers.
You know what? I have actually stayed up on more than one occasion for the leap second.
Oh, nerd! I mean that as a compliment.
Obviously.
That's exactly how I took it. And actually, I've got some strong opinions about leap seconds, but that's a whole other podcast. And anyway, this is why I feel very at home on the Unnecessary Detail stage. And if you need to know exactly what time to set your watch, binary or otherwise, to hear the digital pips. You can see the slide that Rachel was talking about and all those details over in our show notes.
Which is where you'll find links to Rachel's daily walking podcast called Walk the Pod, which I do listen to myself. I really love it when I'm walking my son to his childminder. I tell you, it's absolutely perfect for a short walk if you want to get out of your head. You don't need a link for that. You just need to search for Walk the Pod wherever you get your podcasts. I mean, you found us, so finding Walk the Pod is not beyond your skill set.
Rachel's also hosting the Douglas Adams Memorial Lecture for Save the Rhino International on Thursday, the 26th of May, 2022 in London, or you can tune in online at the same time. That's the day after tomorrow, by the way, or if you're listening to this after the 26th of May, it's in the past, but you can find links to it in the show notes as well.
Okay, it's time for a biochemical engineer.
Wait, is that still, still technically a joke?
I don't know if that's a joke anymore, but I do know that I never realized how much of a difference there was between a tube and a pipe.
Is there a difference? Tube versus pipe?
Oh my goodness.
Same thing.
Yes. Michael Sulu's entire talk is about the difference between pipes and tubes. Yeah, he goes into the details, but look, Steve and I have been doing our own research, right? I'm going to read something out from wonderfulengineering.com. For the layman, a tube and a pipe are much the same thing. But for an engineer and a student of fluid mechanics, the minute differences can be of grave consequences. Matt, what I'm saying is tube grave. Does not equal pipe. If tube equals pipe, death results.
Grave.
Wow. Grave indeed. If that didn't clear it up for you, Matt, here's civilengineersforum.com. For a person who is not involved with technical know-how, pipes and tubes are pretty much the same. But the truth is, they are not. Pipe and tube are two entirely different objects. Pipe versus tube is something that even the common public should realise, that interchanging these two can cause serious problems.
Pipe
v tube equals death.
Okay, I get that there's a difference, and everyone seems to know it, apart from me. I still have no idea what the actual difference is.
Yeah, well, look, there are differences. It's like a whole bunch of things like sizes and rigidity and coupling and pressure resistance, right? Okay. But all of that is like irrelevant because of something even bigger going on that I'm going to hand over to Michael Sulu to explain.
Hello, hello, hello. Are there any other engineers in the house? Oh, good. So this is going to be a lot of revision for you lot, but everyone else has got a lot to learn in a very short space of time. Right. So we biochemical engineers, we try and answer the big questions, the global challenges, and they are how to feed a growing population sustainably, how to sustainably fuel or power the globe, and how to keep an aging population alive. I can assure you I have personally solved all these things, and we're not talking about them today. We've got to keep going, because I've got a lot of very important stuff to get on. So, we're going on to unnecessary detail. I will say one thing. Children ask really specific questions. And to illustrate that, I've got a little story, which was I was giving a talk at the end of it, in the Q&A session, a six-year-old girl stood up, and she said, I've got a question for you. She's a very precocious little girl. And I said, go ahead, having no fear of this child. And she said, why haven't you solved haemophilia? I said, you ask a good question. But someone actually has nearly done it. University students, however, ask much simpler and less difficult questions than little children do. Not as smart. I blame the education system. And they ask things like this. What's the difference between a tube and a pipe? I was going to focus today on the difference between a bolt and a screw, but I couldn't thread a story together. It's the only joke. So, right, this is a tube and a pipe. The engineers who have already identified themselves will obviously know the difference. But for the rest of you, we have a lot to get through. Right. Obviously, there's a plethora of difference. You can see the engineers, obviously, with their keen eyes. We'll see it just by visual inspection. We'll go back, tube, pipe, obvious. Now, What I will say is that because I knew there wouldn't be all engineers here today, I did some Googling to try and find out some more information about the difference between a tube and a pipe. The first thing I found is essentially getting it wrong can kill you. Not important enough that they got the grammar right. For the layman, it's more of the same thing. But the message is still there. This one from civil engineers is also patronising. It talks about even the common public should realise that interchanging these two things can cause serious problems. Right. We have got to the point where we can all basically know the difference between a tube and a pipe, which is good. I have got a list of actual differences, but I'm not going to go through them because they're not important now. What's more important is what I found out next. We have a Professor Micheletti and Dr. Velez Tubebi. These two wonderful engineers, both much better engineers than myself, I work with them. So I was telling them the premise of this talk, or lecture, shall we say, today, and they said, Professor Micheletti, who's Italian, said there isn't a different word for tube and pipe in Italian. And Dr. Velez Tubebi, who's Mexican, said there isn't a different word for tube and pipe in Spanish either. So obviously, this leads us to one logical conclusion. If you can't use language to differentiate between a tube and a pipe, how do you know which one you're using? We've already got to the point that we know that it can be deadly. So I did the sensible thing, the same thing that any of you here would have done. I obviously got Excel out, conditionally formatted all of the countries in the world so that it would say, based on whether or not their first or second language in their nation has a different word for a tube or a pipe, it was a safe place for you to travel to. There you go. It's obviously colour-coordinated, very simple. Green, safe. Red, not safe. Yellow, you may travel at your own peril. And I have it because everyone loves a chart in pie chart form. It doesn't look so bad, does it? Because there's a lot of green there. But that isn't actually that useful for you. And I'm not giving you my spreadsheet. It took me a long time to make it. But what I will say is this is really useful for you. All of the countries of the globe, based on whether or not they're safe to travel to, based on whether or not there's a different word for tube and pipe in their native language. The weird thing about this map I found as I was doing it is it's probably the only positive thing about colonialism, because all of the African nations agree. I will leave you. Yes, you're right. I have probably just saved your life. And not all heroes wear capes. Thank you.
So that's cleared up the difference between a tube and a pipe. Not at all. Still got no idea. Now I'm also scared. Although, you know what? I think we've just had a glimpse of some kind of secret, like, Ponzi scheme to keep engineers employed. They're like, oh my goodness, you need us around. Otherwise, you can't tell the difference between a pipe and a tube, which is super important for reasons.
I mean, it's kind of seeming likely, isn't it? Although, I do have to say that Mike does some really amazing work, not just in his day job as an engineering academic, but he was saying that he does these outreach events and he has to answer questions from kids. And he gave us a couple of highlights, like, how do you cut a horse in half? That's a great engineering question.
Such a kid question.
Right, how many Krispy Kreme donuts do you need to eat to kill you?
Oof, that's impractical.
This is crucial stuff. What's the biggest animal that you could kill with a 30-centimeter shatterproof ruler? Like, if the biggest problem is tube versus pipe equals death, these kids are onto something.
You know, Mike did ask us to say that he's on Twitter if anyone wants to ask him questions directly. I mean, he may regret the offer, but it is genuine.
It's really said that.
And that's handy because I've got a question.
What, one for Mike?
No. My question is, who's sponsoring this episode?
Oh, I thought you'd never ask.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Steve, you like honey, right?
I do.
Yeah, and badgers, they're cute, aren't they?
Very cute.
Yeah, so honey badgers, they must be so lovely.
So lovely. Wait a second. Why do I feel like I'm being set up for something?
Okay.
Don't fall for it, Steve. We've got Hannah Ayoub here to set you straight on the middle of the honey badger Venn diagram.
Hello, everyone. So, give me a cheer if you have heard of the honey badger. Brilliant. Okay, we're doing well. Give me a cheer if you heard of the honey badger because of a meme. Okay, so like, honey badger doesn't care, honey badger doesn't give a shit, etc., etc. So, back in 2011, a video came out of footage of honey badgers with a comedy voiceover by someone known only as Randall. The video went viral. As of yesterday, it's had like 99 million views. And various phrases from the video went viral in their own right. They became memes that are still used today. Now, because of the honey badger's status as like internet legend, I thought everyone would know about them in the same level of detail that I do. Potentially unnecessary levels of detail, perhaps. But apparently not. So tonight we are going to meet the mustelid behind the myth. Thank you to those who laughed at that. So the honey badger is related to skunks, ferrets, weasels, other badgers, although it is more closely related to the weasel than it is to our European badger, which is interesting and probably also a good thing, as you'll later find out. It is found throughout sub-Saharan Africa, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and parts of Western Asia. And basically, whenever it wants to like take a nap or hide, it just digs a hole, which it can do in a matter of minutes, whether that's in ground, in a tree trunk, in a termite mound, you know, wherever, really. They're usually found alone, but they are sometimes found with a mate or with a cub in tow. And the name honey badger comes from the fact that it's thought that they like to eat honey. Turns out they much prefer honeybee larvae, and so will like break into any natural hive or man-made hive. People have tried to make the man-made ones honey badger-proof and mostly failed. They'll get like right in deep into the hive to get hold of the honeybee larvae. And people previously thought that they were immune to bee stings. No, they just don't care about them.
even though some honey badgers have died from bee stings, still don't care. They've got quite a thick skin, literally. And they also have another surprise for the bees. So like their relative, the skunk, they can release a massive stink bomb, which can stun bees. But they tend to only use that in life-threatening situations, which apparently is whenever they break into a beehive. Now, when, you know, the honeybee larvae that isn't quite enough, other things that honey badgers will eat include reptiles, amphibians, scorpions, birds, baby foxes, baby jackals, baby wildcats, turtle eggs, porcupines, because that thick skin means apparently the quills don't get in too deep. They do get in, they just don't care. Their bite is also strong enough to break open a tortoise shell, because they don't have enough food already. And they'll also eat most plants and roots. Why not? They'll stack up stones to get up to high places to store things. They'll, you know, dig holes, they'll store things in there. Part of their reptile diet does include venomous snakes. Also not immune to the venom, but they do sort of gradually build up some venom as cubs, as their mothers gradually introduce them to more and more venomous animals until they're happy to eat a cobra. Perfect parenting right there. In addition to all the previously mentioned food, they also like to scavenge, and they like to steal from predators, which means they quite often end up face-to-face with a predator that's about 20 times their size. Because honey badgers are about 30 to 40 centimeters tall. They only weigh 5 to 11 kilos. They're not that big. They just have the attitude to make up for it. So if they end up face-to-face with, like, a fully grown lion, they will make a rattle roar. Very interesting noise, suggest looking it up. Their hair will stand on end, and they will charge at the predator. This usually puts the predator off. Sheer aggression, it turns out, is an evolutionary strategy. If that doesn't work, they release the stink bomb. If that doesn't work, and a predator actually gets hold of them, perhaps by the scruff of their neck, they can actually turn around almost 360 degrees inside their skin. It's that loose. So predator grabs them in the back, they turn around completely, claw them in the face, or bite them right back. The Guinness Book of World Records once named them the most fearless animal on Earth, and I think they're doing pretty well at that. Now, I wasn't introduced to the honey badger because of their internet status. I was introduced to them because of a particular honey badger called Stufel, which many members of my family have seen at a rehab center in South Africa. And Stufel has been called an ambassador for the species because Stufel embodies everything that is awesome and crazy about the honey badger. So Stufel was raised from a young age by a farmer and therefore was imprinted on humans, so had to be moved over to the rehab center after causing chaos in the home that he was raised in. He proceeded to cause chaos in the rehab center. First off, he kept eating other residents, including an eagle. Apparently that's frowned upon. So they put him in quite a large enclosure. He broke out of this, went to visit some lions, landed in hospital for 2 months, came out of hospital, went to visit the lions again, injured them quite badly this time. So he was put in a more secure enclosure, which he broke out of. Used to, like, break into the kitchens to get food, break into guests' rooms, tear through their bags, etc., etc. So all the trees were taken away from around his enclosure so that he couldn't climb out using those. He still managed to get out. They realized it was because he was stacking up stones and rocks, so they took those away. Stufel then started digging up dirt, rolling it up into balls, stacking up the balls. And the first time he did that, he broke into his handler's house just to make sure everyone was very clear he could still get out. At some point during all this, they tried to get him a girlfriend. They just both escaped together again and again and again. So eventually, the rehab centre decided that he just was going to be a free-ranging badger. They just keep a very close eye on him. Now, when I visited South Africa quite a few years ago, I was absolutely dead set on meeting Stoofel, which didn't happen. We didn't have enough time. But I did see two honey badgers in the wild in 3 days, which is practically unheard of. And seeing these monochrome masters of mayhem in the wild has absolutely cemented their place as my favorite animal. And I hope that tonight I've convinced some of you to give honey badgers a place as your favorite animal too. Thank you very much, everyone.
Woo! Don't cross a honey badger. All right, I get it now. Thanks. Thanks.
Yeah, that's the kind of life lesson that Hannah is really good at. So if you want more great zoology stuff, she's on social media and has a website where she runs online science comedy gigs. They're so good. She draws amazing art, science, crossover stuff as well that she sells in her Etsy shop. I do personally have a large collection of her Christmas cards, in particular the tattooed manatee with a Santa hat on. That's my favourite. All of that is linked in the show notes.
And as we're now gently rolling to a halt at the end of the podcast, it can only mean one thing. Helen is going to play us out with a song.
Yeah, I sure am. But before we do that, we are contractually obliged to mention that we're part of the Acast Creator Network.
I also feel obliged to mention that a load of extra detail about all our guests, lyrics to Helen's songs, links to everything we've mentioned and all that good stuff is in our show notes. Click the link in the podcast description or find it on festivalofthespokennerd.com/podcast.
And I am under no obligation, contractual or otherwise, to mention that there'll be another episode of this podcast next week, back to the regular format. However, if you've enjoyed hearing things recorded live on stage, all three of our Festival the Spoken Nerd stand-up specials are available for download on our website for just £3 £3 and 14 pence. It's a price so hilarious, it's immune to inflation.
If you want to get in touch, we're on all the social medias and we're on podcast at festivalofthespokennerd.com. Right, over to Helen for the song and see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Hello, I'm Helen. I'm one third of Festival of Spoken Nerd and the one who organises all the shows. So I get to do... Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yeah, that's about the right amount. Can everyone hear the ukulele? Yeah, I'm sorry about that. That's fine. I organise the shows, which means I get to do whatever songs I like in this show. And I'm going to do two songs. The first one has 1.5 jokes in it. So the words aren't actually by me. The words are by my friend Beck Hill, who is who many of you know. You'll have seen her on Make Away, Take Away if you've got kids under 10, or you'll have seen her on The Jonathan Ross Show. She's a comedian. She often does An Evening of Unnecessary Detail. She's fantastic. She wrote a song for a friend of hers who had their heart broken, and she asked me to set it to music. I never get to perform this song because, like I say, it's called 1.5 Jokes in It. She's not a high enough hit rate for my normal set, so I'm getting to do it tonight just because I just really want to record it for our podcast. that's literally it. I do warn you, we've got 1.5 jokes. I keep going on about 1.5 jokes because I really want you to enjoy them when they turn up. If you spot them. I mean, they're quite subtle. But anyway, what I need is I need three people on the front row to help me. Yes, this is a song that does involve some audience interaction. So can I have three volunteers who are nice on the front row? I'm just looking at 1, 2, 3 there. I need you to say something. I'll tell you what you're going to say. Don't improvise. It's not that kind of show. So I'm going to go do, 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 do. And you say, you can do it. Can we have a little practice?
You can do it.
Yeah, okay. That's. It's more like, I want it a bit more encouraging. You're sort of saying, you can do it. I mean, yeah, which is nice, but like, I want encouraging. Give another go, okay. Do, 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 do.
You can do it.
Oh, that's brilliant. Wow. It's like you were born for this. That's so good. I love it. Your one is do, 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 48, 49, 50. But a bit, again, like you're counting press ups or something, you know. Here we go. Do, 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 do.
48, 49, 50.
Oh, you gave it some on the end there. That was really good. You know what? But I get that you held a little bit back for later, haven't you? Yeah, yeah, because you're going to have to do this in the middle of the song, so just hold a little bit back. Just give me 110%. Don't tell Matt I said that. Give it 110% when you do it. All right, so your line is, work it, lady. That's the line.
Work it, lady.
It wasn't how I imagined it, but it kind of worked for me, actually. Actually, just do it exactly like that, or something completely different, up to you. Totally fine. I loved it. You're brilliant. Perfect. That's going to be great. Don't worry. I'll give you a bit of warning before it happens. All right? You're actually leaning forward and you look slightly nervous. Because these three aren't going to enjoy those 1.5 jokes. They're just not going to. They're just too nervous. Here we go. Let me explain what this song is. So, the words were written as a poem by Beck. She asked me to set it to music. And it is a song about a strong woman at a circus, which is quite an unusual job. It's a particularly unusual job for a woman. And it's very difficult to progress. It's very difficult to get promoted. It's very difficult to further your career as a strong woman in the circus. But I tell you who has it worse, the trapeze artists. Because those female trapeze artists, the glass ceiling gets them every time. That was a bonus joke that wasn't even in the song, so enjoy it more than you thought, right? Good. Let me just check what I've got. Yeah, brilliant. I've written the whole song's on my hand. Well done, everyone. I hope everyone has forgotten as much as I have throughout the entire pandemic, because and that none of you have to then sing it in front of 500 people. Good for you. Here we go. Did you hear about the act at the circus? Tonight she's trying a new part. You'll be on the edge of your seat with her amazing feet. She's a strong woman with a broken heart. A strong woman with a broken heart. She fell in love with a handsome clown, and they began a glorious affair. But life can be cruel and not all fun. Ironic when you live at the fair. Yeah, that was the half joke. Well identified, very good. You're a smart audience. Here we go. The woman who was mightier than 20 men was slowly falling apart. She remembered the saying, on with the show. The strong woman with a broken heart. A strong woman with a broken heart. The pain in her chest grew intense, and she booked. That was the joke! All right, just thank you very much. They applauded on the front row. I think out of relief that it wasn't their turn to do their thing. All right, I'll do it again, and you'll enjoy it 50% more or less the second time. Who knows? Here we go. The pain in her chest grew intense, and someone laughed before I even did the joke. It was that good. You were like, I know what's coming. Lol. I'm really enjoying this. Thank you so much. The pain in her chest grew intense, and she booked a doctor to treat her. He said, your heart is just a muscle like the other. Don't let this setback defeat you. Don't worry, it's not yet. You're fine. You've got another 30 seconds. Here we go. She took his advice and began training. She needed somewhere to start. Remembered the saying, no pain, no gain. The strong woman worked out her heart. The strong woman worked out her heart. Here you go. Do, 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 do.
You can do it.
Do, 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 do.
48, 49, 50.
Do, 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 do.
Work it, lady.
applause for our wonderful
Every time she used her heart, it grew and grew. She learned to laugh again at clowns, lifted weights while she juggled dates, toned up those smiles and lost those frowns. Did you hear about the act at the circus? Tonight she's trying a new part. She is mightier than 20 men plus one. The strong woman with a strong heart. The strong woman with a strong heart.
A podcast of Unnecessary Detail is made by Festival of the Spoken Nerd. That's Helen Arney, Steve Mould and Matt Parker. Our series producer is Lindsay Fenner, who also produced this episode. Our theme music is by Howard Carter, and we are proud to be part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.